Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. This week, we've been talking about our hyper-connected world of wireless digital devices and how it's changing us for better and for worse. We've looked at the potential health impacts of holding cell phones or laptops too close to our bodies. We've talked about the tech economy and who's really profiting from these free services. Yesterday, we talked about how young people are impacted by growing up immersed in a soup of electronics. The fact is, digital technology has revolutionized so many aspects of our lives, and we're not about to give it up. But how might we rethink our habits and our patterns? And that's the topic we're talking about today. How can we gain value from our hyper-connected world while minimizing potential harm? What is the best way to unplug? What are unhealthy and healthy habits? And we're talking about everything from radiation to sleep deprivation. Is this a public health issue? And if it is, what should be done about it? Today, we're joined by Levi Felix. He's founder and CEO of Digital Detox and director of Camp Grounded Summer Camp for Adults. As a community organizer and retreat facilitator with a background in psychology, his goal is to connect people and connect people offline. Levi focuses on tech addiction, balance, and the importance of unplugging. This past summer, Levi helped curate Fast Company's Complete Printable Guide to Unplugging and Inc. Magazine's The What Not to Bring on Vacation list. And he joins me here in studio. Hi, Levi. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me this morning.
We're also joined by Dr. Joel Moskowitz. He directs the Center for Family and Community and the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley. Joel and his colleagues published a review of the research on the cancer risks from mobile phone use in 2009. And since then, he's served as a resource to journalists and policymakers who are concerned about the health effects of wireless radiation. And Joel joins us from his office in Berkeley. Hi, Joel. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So, Joel, I want to ask you first. Is this a public health issue, the fact that we are now so connected to our devices?
It's absolutely a major and growing public health issue because of the proliferation of these devices, the amount of time we spend on them, how we use them, the exposure of others to our devices is also creating a secondhand exposure issue for people, particularly in public transit. So increasingly what we're doing is creating electrosmog, putting out lots of energy, which is actually wasting a lot of energy, and exposing ourselves to energy which interacts with various aspects of our biology, including, as was discussed in earlier episodes this week, opening the blood-brain barrier, which then enables any toxins in your blood to penetrate your brain tissue, causing all kinds of neurological defects and problems.
You also say that there is denial in the public health community of adverse health effects. What kinds of conversations are you having with public health community activists?
Well, there's good reason. We don't have conclusive evidence of most public health problems, and the industry plays heavily on that, particularly in the U.S., to argue that we don't need to issue any precautionary health warnings. And when we do issue precautionary health warnings, when governments do get around to doing that, they're usually such mixed messages that the average person doesn't know what to do. And because it's inconvenient to take even simple precautions, and distance is your friend, as has been repeated numerous times during this week, people tend not to take any precaution. And so this increases the problem. And the problems are not just increased tumor risk. I believe people have talked about the brain cancer, the tripling of risk after 25 years of cell phone use. There's other forms of non-malignant tumors that are also at increased risk. But we're also seeing increasingly reproductive health effects. In animal models, in rats, we see that prenatal exposures increase what appears to be attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, or memory and learning problems in these rats. We also find evidence from human studies, children in Denmark who've been followed for a long time, evidence of ADHD among children who are exposed prenatally, and even more so among those who had exposure after they were born. So there's increasing evidence, coming also from other countries. For example, South Korea did a study of children, and they found that among children who had slightly elevated blood lead levels, the amount of cell phone use predicted the risk of ADHD in these children. So that would suggest that these very low exposures to cell phone radiation are opening the blood-brain barrier, enabling lead, which is a known risk factor for ADHD, to penetrate the brain tissue. There's about a dozen studies showing evidence of sperm damage, some observational data suggesting that men who carry cell phones in their pocket near their reproductive organs, near their testes, are more likely to experience infertility. So there's increasing evidence of a whole range of health problems. We're also, I've been hearing and been reading about more and more people reporting developing essentially allergic sensitivity to electromagnetic radiation. In Sweden, this is recognized as a functional impairment, and there have been some cases around the world where people have been compensated for having a disability. Our government has been in complete denial about addressing these issues. In fact, it's so bad that the cities of Boston and Philadelphia recently submitted an official document to the FCC, essentially accusing our federal health agencies and the FCC of negligence. They called it a pass-the-buck attitude, and they cited a case where the FCC was asked to investigate these claims about electromagnetic sensitivity more than a decade ago, and they have yet to open up the inquiry.
That is Dr. Joel Moskowitz. He directs the Center for Family and Community in the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley. He says that when we're talking about digital devices, this really does need to be treated as a public health risk and a public health issue. He focuses on the health effects. We're also joined by Levi Felix. He's founder and CEO of Digital Detox. And Levi, you really focus on the psychological effects.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the phones and devices and see how it's affecting our social spheres and our community, right? The relationships. You know, if we don't have a good relationship with each other, with our parents, with our friends, with our teachers, and with ourselves, like, that's the beginning of a really bad health. And so, looking at, we're spending, the average American spends about 8 to 12 hours a day on a screen. People who come to our camps and our retreats, we do surveys, it's about 13 hours a day.
13?
And we ask people, when was the last time you went 24 hours without looking at a screen? And most people say it's been, you know, 2 years. And so that's what's startling to me, is when we think about how fast this has happened. You know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, the only people who were available all the time were doctors and firefighters and maybe mothers or fathers of small children. The rest of us, you know, could go away for a movie or could go away for dinner or even just have a lunch and be unreachable. Now wait, I can't get a hold of you in 5 minutes. You didn't respond to my text message immediately. Oh, I just emailed you and called you and sent you a tweet and you didn't get back to me. And so when we start thinking about what that does to our brain, what that does to our communities, that's what alarms me. I mean, you know, there's a lot about sleep cycles. You know, if you look at a screen before you go to bed, mm-hmm. it changes melatonin levels in your brain. And if you have a phone next to your bed or if you have a computer near you when you sleep, it puts you on high alert throughout the night. You know, just psychologically knowing that you could be reached or knowing that you can be bothered, knowing that information might come in, keeps you at this stress level, this fight or flight. And then the idea of multitasking, you know, actually, I think there's only 2% of the population who are actually good at multitasking. But when we use computers and phones, you know, we're checking emails consistently. We're switching tasks, they say, about every 2 to 3 minutes. So we're just living in this hyper multitasking life. And so that puts you in the fight or flight mode and makes you more irritated and agitated and also decreases hunger because you don't pay attention to yourself. So, you know, those are the impacts that I look at, is what does it mean to always be available, to not be looking each other in the eye, and to be on buses or street corners where instead of looking at the person next to us and saying, hey, how do I get to this place for lunch? Or where's the best place, you know, to watch the view? We pull out our phones and we're ignoring the people around us.
So because this is a fairly new phenomenon in the last 5 years, do we know the long-term effects of this? I mean, we do know. Studies show that about 75% of us fall asleep with our cell phones within reach. Using a phone right before bed has been shown to interfere with the length and quality of sleep. I mean, that there are tons of studies out there about that. But do we know the long-term effects of all of these things that you just mentioned?
I mean, we can't, right? I mean, how long have we been connected the way we are? You know, 5, 10 years. So, you know, we know the short-term things that are happening. And they say, I think Forensic Psychology America says that high internet users are 2.5 times more likely to be depressed than those who aren't. You know, and so that's a short-term thing. That's people who've been on the internet for the last 5 to 10 years. You know, there's a lot of eye strain going on. There's a disorder now. The computer eye, they're calling it. I've been seeing it pop up in the media as well, where, you know, our eyes aren't meant to look at a screen that's glowing for, you know, for hours on end. And so I think we're starting to finally see what it's just doing to us in the last few years. You know, also, I'm sure Professor can attest to this, when you look at a screen and when you're multitasking and online, they're finding that, you know, it shifts the structure of your cerebellum and your gray matter and your white matter, you know, change structures. They can decrease and increase up to 20%. And so this, you know, these are affecting us. And I mean, you look at a mother who's raising a small child, and, you know, instead of looking at her baby while she's breastfeeding, she's looking at her phone, and she's no longer getting the cues of what the cry means. I'm hungry, I'm sad. What does this do to the child 10 years later when he doesn't know that his mom is listening to him?
Joel, what are your thoughts on this? Health risks aside, what do you make of the psychological effects of being connected 24/7?
They seem to be profound, as reported by Sherry Turkle, who's a MIT scientist and professor who's studied electronic technologies for several decades. She has a recent book on this issue, particularly looking at this new generation of young adults and how it's impacted their lives. And she's reported that students in a dormitory in rooms next to each other would prefer to text each other than actually have face-to-face conversation, for example. And when she asked them why, she says, well, I can control the situation much better when I'm texting. I feel too nervous when I'm face-to-face with another peer. So obviously there's some profound effects. Some are for the good, but I think many of these effects, as Levi was explaining, are for the bad. With regard to long-term effects, clearly we have evidence coming from other countries of following people who've used it for 25 or more years, and there's clearly evidence of a tripling of brain cancer with 25 years of use, and about a doubling of brain cancer with 10 years of use. But these are, as one of the callers the other day pointed out, these are case-control studies, but you really can't do controlled studies. Currently, there's some major long-term cohort studies where you follow people for 20 to 30 years, but those studies are going to be so confounded that it's going to be hard to draw any conclusions. The industry has been co-opting much of the scientific community internationally. There's virtually no scientific community in this country studying this issue because our government won't fund it, the research. But internationally, the industry has been funding many of the researchers for these cohort studies, and essentially what's happened is they've co-opted them to, in the interim, to dismiss any risks or harms that they do find in their research. In order not to bite the hand that feeds them, they basically write off any harmful effects, these researchers, and they seem to be systematically biasing the reporting of their research, at the very least, when they publish it. And this is really a problem for building the scientific knowledge base, because when you have a scientific community that's highly dependent on industry for its funding, it really distorts the nature of the research. The quality of the research at all, as well, seems to be suffering in many instances. So this is becoming increasingly alarming to me, the fact that we are not making progress in understanding the risks, and more importantly, in developing the appropriate alternative technologies to reduce the risk. Certainly a good principle is ALARA, or as low as reasonably achievable, but this is not currently the mentality of those who create this technology. In fact, they have the very opposite philosophy. An AT&T technician came through my office, I think it was last summer, measuring, because they've taken over a contract for the wireless on the campus, both Wi-Fi and cellular, and he measured my Wi-Fi access at my desk, and he goes, oh, this is great, it's such and such, and it only needs to be such and such. So I looked it up, and it was about 20 times more than I actually needed to get Wi-Fi access at my desk. And I'm in a situation where I don't even use Wi-Fi in my office, and yet I'm exposed to far higher levels than I would ever need. So this is just the opposite mentality industry has, trying to saturate us with this form of microwave radiation everywhere we go, in the interest of profit, basically. And for past 5 years, I've been talking about this issue to journalists, policymakers, occasionally community presentations. I keep promoting, I've been only asking for a nickel a month for research in this country, because that would generate sufficient money for research, training, and education. Deborah Davis has been advocating for a dollar a year, slightly more. But most of the time, the media doesn't even cover that. It would be a drop in the bucket, given that the industry now says that they estimate the average revenue per month from a single cell phone subscription is over $60. Mm. So another nickel a month, nobody's going to notice. But the industry is opposed to our doing research on this. When Tom Wheeler was the head of the CTIA, the Wireless Association, before he became chair of the FCC, he actually headed an industry-funded research program, $28 million program, and then proceeded to subvert the research and then suppress it when it began to show evidence of DNA damage and other harm. And the industry then decided just to get out of the research business. But there's numerous cases in the U.S. of early cell phone researchers who had their funding cut off once they reported evidence of DNA damage or other harms to organisms. The EPA was doing cutting-edge research back in the 90s, and when they began to report out evidence of harm, the defense industry and the telecom industry and other major defense industries and the military actually got the Congress to cut off the funding to the EPA and prevent the EPA from doing any more research on this issue. We have essentially one major study going on now with rats and mice that the Congress mandated a long time ago, and will basically test the long-term effects of exposure to second-generation cell phone technology. I suspect by the time those results are published, second-generation cell phone technology will no longer be in use, because although we use it currently now for voice, at that point in time, in the near future, we're going to move all of the communications to 4G or LTE. We have only one health effects study in the published literature looking at LTE, and that study shows that a 30-minute exposure to the LTE cell phone radiation, mind you, that the subjects don't know if the phone is on or off, affects the brain activity on both sides of the brain. So you don't even have to be talking on your cell phone to have your brain affected by the cell phone energy.
That is Dr. Joel Moskowitz. He directs the Center for Family and Community in the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley. He and his colleagues published a review of the research on cancer risks from cell phones in 2009. We're also joined by Levi Felix, founder and CEO of Digital Detox and director of Camp Grounded, summer camp for adults. His main goal is to connect people offline without their devices. And we'd love to hear from you. We've been doing a week-long series of our hyper-connected world, focusing on everything from the tech economy to the effects of radiation and laptops, cell phones, you name it. We talked about children yesterday. What questions do you still have about our hyper-connected world? And when we talk about gaining value from these devices while minimizing the risk, what do you do to minimize the risk? And if you still have questions about the studies that have or have not been conducted, what the research actually shows, if you've been directly affected psychologically by being connected all the time, we'd love to hear your story and how are you dealing with it. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you work in the public health field, what are your thoughts on whether this is a public health issue and what should be done about it? 866-798-8255. And you can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, Levi, Joel looks at the data and the research about how this is affecting our health. you actually work with people. I mean, you had a digital detox party on Friday. I went to it. Hundreds of people were there, and you're not allowed to bring in your cell phone. You also direct these camp-grounded summer camps for adults where people leave their phones for 4 days and play games, and you're not allowed to talk about networking or venture capital or anything like that. What can you tell us in terms of real-life stories about how people are affected by all of this?
Yeah, so we've been doing retreats now for about 2 years. We've organized 18 retreats, which are small 10 to 12 people retreats. People from Silicon Valley, from New York, from really across the country. We've had international folks fly in, as well as a summer camp. And both of those experiences, as well as the party you attended on Friday, where people check their phone in and all their devices, screens, laptops, you know, anything that glows, you know, even watches. And you know, there's always a sense of nervousness or maybe a little bit of anxiety when people first, you know, unplug. And it's like, well, what if someone needs to get a hold of me? Or what if I miss something? Or what if there's something going on that I need to be somewhere else? But once that sheds, you know, and you give people a journal and a pen to replace that desire of taking pictures, and you kind of replace the things that we've sought out online, you know, okay, tweeting and liking things on Facebook. So that's, we're looking for community. We're looking to share knowledge. Okay, give people games and some prompts to have conversations and, you know, fill that void with the things we're searching for. You see this connection, this deeper connection, and especially at camp and at the retreats. You know, a big thing that we focus on is meals. So the idea is when you unplug from your technology, it's reconnection with self, reconnection with others, reconnection with nature, and then, you know, deep interpersonal relationships. And meals, eating around the table is like the best time to do that. You know, religion throughout history, you know, cultures thrive off of meal times. You know, you ring a bell, you say a prayer, you light a candle. And, you know, the average American now, you know, one out of three people eat over a cell phone or a computer. And most people, you know, will pull it out during a lunch or dinner. And so when you remove that, whether it's for a few days or just a night, and people connect over the meal, well, you see their dinner takes a little longer. They sit and enjoy each other. They look at their meal and they're like, oh, what am I actually eating? You know, what's in this? So we found on our retreats, participants left and changed their diets because they started paying attention just in the few days they were with us about what they were eating. They decided they want to go home and be more mindful about that. A few other things we've seen is some, you know, partners, husbands and wives who, and partners who came to retreats and camps, you know, they didn't have cell phones in their bedrooms when they were together. And when they left, they made the decision of, hey, let's keep the cell phone out of our bedroom now. So when we wake up in the morning and we turn over, we don't turn over to our phone as the alarm clock. We turn over to each other and cuddle for a moment. And we don't interrupt our sleep or even our sex. I think it's, you know, the numbers are crazy. It's like 25% of people, if not more, will answer a phone or a text message during sexual activity. So, you know, we found that people reconnect with each other and themselves profoundly, you know, when they can unplug. And it's not that we feel like getting off your devices is the answer in the end of the day. It's just finding the mindfulness, right? How do you know if you're allergic to something unless you step away from it? How do you know if something's toxic in your life until you step away? And then you say, wait, do I really need 45 apps open on my phone all the time? No, I could probably get rid of most of those and, in fact, disable all my push notifications so no one's bugging me when I don't want to be bugged. And I can choose that I want to check my email. I can choose that I want to get on Facebook. I can choose that I want to tweet, etc. And so, you know, unplugging for that moment gives you the chance to re-question how fast we've become available. And I can talk a lot about this.
25% of people answer a phone during sex.
Yeah, I have. Another thing I like to share is I call it shext messaging. If you're at home, raise your hand if you use a phone on the toilet, right? Pretty much all of us do. I think 75% of people have taken a conference call or have played Friends with Scrabble or, you know, these games. But one out of six cell phones is covered in a pretty absurd amount of E. coli fecal matter, because when you leave the toilet, you don't wash your phone, you wash your hands.
Yeah, that's another public health issue, because you're right. I just read a study about that cell phones are really dirty.
And then you put them up to your face and your child's face and on the table.
Hold on, I thought we're going to take a quick break. Today we're talking about whether or not being connected is a public health issue and what we should do about it. It's your call. We'll be back after this.
Your call here on Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco. Lots of ways you can join in the conversation on the phone, 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK, or you can send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or simply go to the website, yourcallradio.org, and leave a message there. Coming up in 30 minutes at 11 o'clock, live from the World Service of the BBC, Sports World have your say.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of Senator Dianne Feinstein accusing the CIA of spying on a Senate panel. How are the media linking this latest revelation to the NSA's mass surveillance program? We'll also discuss coverage of the renewed protests in Turkey. That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about our hyperconnected world. We've been discussing this all week. We've looked at potential health effects of radiation. We've talked about the tech economy. We talked about children yesterday. And today, we're kind of putting this all together and saying, okay, the fact is 91% of the population uses a cell phone. That's not going to change. In fact, probably it's going to get, well, I don't know if you want to say worse, but more people are going to become connected. So how can we gain value from our hyperconnected world while minimizing the harm? And we're talking about the potential harm from radiation to sleep deprivation to relationships. And we'd love to hear from you. How have your habits changed because of technology for the better, for the worse? And if you've seen a bad habit, how have you changed it? And then when you're looking at the big picture, do you think this should be a public health issue? And how should this be dealt with at a time when you've got the FCC chair who used to work for the telecom industry, and all of our guests this week said there's not enough funding, if any funding at all, for the scientific research that needs to be done in the United States. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And we've got a number of callers on the line, so let's hear from Adam and Hollister. Hi, Adam. Welcome to the show. Hi, Adam. Are you with us? Well, Adam, if you're hearing this, you can give us a call back. Let's go to Kevin in Santa Cruz. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. It's pretty clear that people are behaving compulsively with these devices. You know, you see them. I sat next to people in concerts, like in a symphony concert. Some kid was continually picking up his phone and checking it between the breaks in a concerto, if you can understand. And I felt like asking him, so did she say yes? As though, you know, there had to be some urgent reason why he was looking at his phone, but it isn't. People walk through crosswalks staring at their phones instead of checking to make sure they're not going to get run down by traffic. And but there's another issue. I think it's one of your guests touched on it. It's the fact that picking up the phone, for instance, and calling someone, speaking to them voice to voice, recalls some demands some emotional investment. It makes people nervous to think about it in advance, and they would prefer to simply, I guess, send a text message rather than talk to somebody directly or by telephone. So, but the one thing I wanted to bring up that hadn't been addressed that much in regard to health impacts has to do with a new trend in the telecoms to install their transmitter receivers on the roofs of buildings and on telephone poles up and down roads and streets in front of people's houses. This is totally unregulated, and it's expanding dramatically because the masts, the big tall masts that were originally the model, are starting to be transferred to these smaller sites that are spread much more densely across the landscape. That's my comment.
All right. Thank you. Joel, have you looked into that, the effects of these transmitters that are put on buildings?
The cell towers, there is a fair amount of research. It's more inconsistent than the research on the cell phone headsets, which doesn't mean to say that it's not harmful. But the exposures generally are much more harmful and much more powerful, likely from your cell phone handset and from the Wi-Fi coming out of your laptop. I'd like to just clarify one thing. Unplug it may make sense from what Levi is saying, and I agree with most of what Levi has said so far. From the standpoint of cell phone radiation, we're encouraging people to plug it in, particularly their laptop. Mm. With a phone, use a landline. Don't use a cordless phone, which generates similar kinds of microwave energy as the cell phone. Don't keep a cell phone or cordless phone base station near your bed. It affects melatonin levels, which affects your sleep, the quality of your sleep. So there's also evidence indicating with children that just the physical activity of having access to a cell phone, particularly a smartphone, seems to exacerbate ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity symptoms. Roughly 1 out of 10 children, school-aged children in the U.S. now is diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity. About 1 in 88 kids has autism. We have no research on autism, and I know researchers personally in England and Israel who want to get funding, even a little bit of funding they can't get, to study the association with cell phone use. We really need, I think if we hope to solve the problems that are undermining our health and the health of our society and our planet, and they're well articulated in a piece I got spammed with today by The Lancet, which is one of the most prestigious medical journals in the world, entitled A New Vision for Planetary Health, a Manifesto. And I encourage people to take a look at that. I have a link to it on my website, saferemr.com. If we hope to solve these problems, it's becoming increasingly obvious to many of us that we need to fix the problems with our political system and get the system to behave in the public interest and not in the corporate interests. We've had about a half a dozen efforts at the state level that have been blocked by the industry for passing the simplest precautionary language around cell phone use. A law just passed the House in Maine, and it's not clear that it will pass the Senate or the get signed by the governor. And all it says is basically read the manufacturer's warnings in the cell phone manual. A similar law just got blocked in the state of Hawaii. Mark Leno in California has tried to pass various versions of the law, including that kind of language, a one-sentence warning saying, read the safety warnings in your manual, and the industry blocked it there. We had some success that it got in San Francisco, as many of your listeners would know, probably know, in getting a fact sheet. The judge, the federal district judge, to actually approve a fact sheet that would be handed out to new consumers. But that got overturned in the Circuit Court of Appeals by two conservative judges. So we have serious, serious problems with our political system now, supporting corporate interests over the public interest, and this affects us with regard to the chemical toxins that we're exposed to, as well as the electromagnetic radiation. Lawrence Lessig, I would encourage people to Google him. He did a lecture in Maine last week. He actually walked the state of New Hampshire in January, believe it or not, with some other activists talking about the corrupt political system that we've allowed to evolve, where corporate interest and moneyed interests basically drive who gets elected, who serves on the bench, who administers the laws, who regulates the industry. This situation has gotten totally out of control, and so we need grassroots activism from people who are concerned about the environment, about our health, about quality of public education. We have a Nobel laureate on this campus who's now talking about the erosion of the quality of public education. We're arguably one of the finest, if not the finest, public higher institute of public higher education in the country, but increasingly the share of public support has diminished to about 6% of state support from the UC budget, UC Berkeley budget at any rate. And the burden is being passed on to many of our students who would like to go into public interest, the public interest sector, and work for nonprofits, but they can no longer afford to do that when they get out of here because they're facing such massive debt burden. So we need to unite across issues, be there environmental concerns or health concerns or concerns about social welfare or education in this country, and find common ground, adopt values that support basic human values and sustainability, and preserve and protect our lives and the lives of other species on this planet.
Levi, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, well, I wanted to jump in on the last caller who was talking about the kid in the show who was checking his phone every few minutes. And there's an initial impulse for us to be judgmental or to say, like, hey, you know, put that thing away, or to be like, hey, you know, why are we checking our phone so much? And being on the public transit even and looking around saying, man, why are everyone always connected? And I'm not sure if you've talked about, you know, dopamine and oxytocin, the neurotransmitters and hormones that are released in our brains throughout the day that, you know, drive us to be connected to people and that drive us to be successful and get rewards. And, you know, it's no joke that the devices, whether it's, you know, cell phones or computers and the apps that are on them, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, are designed to make us want to use them more. And they're designed in a way that they call us to check them more and more. So when someone likes you and someone then likes a likes, and then someone shares a thumbing that you like that someone else commented on that you don't even know that person, it's your cousin's best friend, and now you're looking on their page, right? And it's in Twitter, it's 140 characters, it's super small amounts of information. And so the science behind this is like the same as like alcohol addiction, right? It's a cup, let's say a cup with holes in the bottom of it. So you fill this cup up, but as this cup gets filled, it empties out quicker because it has holes in the bottom of it. So this is how dopamine works, the neurotransmitter in your brain that drives you to seek rewards and succeed in your life. It's what drives business and drives everything forward. And so every time you get a tweet or a message or a ping, you know, your phone goes beep, you know, someone's looking for you, you get some dopamine in your brain. And so now you have this thing of like, okay, I want to see what that is. So you pull out your phone and you check it and you get a little bit of dopamine. But studies are now showing that, you know, little rewards, like little cues, feed more dopamine release. So when you get smaller bits of information, you search something on Google and you just get a little headline, or when someone shares something, you just read the headline, or you get a message and it's only 140 characters, it drives you to want more. And so as you get these shorter and shorter cues that are less fulfilling, you actually want more out of them. And so that's why this kid is sitting in the hall checking his phone incessantly, because he wants more. He's like addicted to his phone. And same with oxytocin. Oxytocin is the hormone that makes us feel connected in the world. It's what you get when you breastfeed, or when you make love, or when you cuddle. It's what your soccer coach, when he gives you a high five, and you get oxytocin, you feel connected in the world to people. And it's like, it's also like the Oprah of the internet. Every time you get a ping or a message or a like, it's like oxytocin for you and dopamine for you. Everybody gets some. And in the end, you know, that drives you on more. And there's studies showing that, you know, a groom on his wedding day versus a groom on social media, he gets more oxytocin. This professor, Dr. Zaki Love from down south, Lola Marymount, shows that a groom will get more oxytocin released in his brain when he's using social media than on his wedding day. And so, like, you know, our devices are making us feel super connected, and that's a great thing. But then we're starting, like Pavlovian animals, we're starting to attribute that dopamine and that oxytocin to our phones instead of the people behind them.
That is Levi Felix. He's founder and CEO of Digital Detox and director of Camp Grounded Summer Camp for Adults. They work to connect people offline. And Dr. Joel Moskowitz directs the Center for Family and Community in the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley. You can find his website, Electromagnetic Radiation Safety, at safermr.com. He also runs the Facebook page, Electromagnetic Radiation Safety. And we've got full lines. We'll have one open in a couple minutes at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And we've got a related caller. Let's go to David in Berkeley. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Along the lines of oxytocin, dopamine, and mental health issues, I've worked as a contractor in the intelligence industry, and we have a tradecraft or spy tool called forced anxiety syndrome, where you make the bad guys start to suspect that they're being watched, and it increases their anxiety level, and they do more bad things without thinking about it. But what's happened is, because the entire world now thinks they're being watched, and indeed yesterday in the Snowden revelations, we found out that Facebook was implanted with millions and millions of bugs and bots and monitors to bug people's computer. The concern I have is that now everybody's going to get forced anxiety syndrome, and along with the oxytocin dopamine triggering that the last caller was just talking about, our devices might end up making us all a little bit nuts. In the tradecraft, we have a slogan, if there's a plug, there's a bug. We now know how to bug every electronic thing, everything that has a battery, the mobile health devices you're wearing on your wrist, your watch, whatever. We can get there, and the bad guys can get there. And again, also yesterday in the Snowden revelations, you'll see that we're now taking over the hackers' bugs that they've put out there to steal your credit cards and retasking them for other things, which is going to make people even more paranoid. Target suffered greatly because people are worried. They have anxiety about shopping at Target. So I'm hoping one of those previous callers who is working closely on the psychological issues could talk about some of the anxiety and stress in society that this is causing.
Wow. I hadn't heard about this, but The Intercept is reporting that Facebook has, well, the NSA impersonated Facebook to trick targets into downloading malicious code. In some cases, the NSA masqueraded as a fake Facebook server, using the website as a launching pad to infect a target's computer and then exfiltrate files from a hard drive. We're talking about the NSA tomorrow, so we'll definitely discuss media coverage of this.
I mean, yeah. I find this fascinating. You know, you're talking about anxiety and we're on high alert. And even something like this, we're like, oh my gosh, you know, now we're on high alert. But something to take note is that, are we really ever fact-checking anything? You know, there was a video that came out yesterday that was like, oh, these beautiful couples are making out spontaneously. Yeah. And then it comes out, this is a commercial.
Yeah.
And they're actors and models and beautiful people from Hollywood and from Paris. And so, you know, I think, you know, we have an airplane disappear from space, and people are like, oh my God, it's been 48 hours. How do we not know yet? It must be something going on. So I think it's time we all take a step back and say, if we're getting information really quickly, it might not be right, and we need to question where it's coming from, and we need to question what the source is. And so if we want to live in a world that's super fast-paced, we're going to have more anxiety. And so I think at large we need to slow down, whether it's from a text message from your mom or whether it's, you know, looking up a recipe or maybe Waze is showing you the wrong direction somewhere. I think it's time we take a step back and we say, okay, slow and steady, we'll probably win this race.
Joel, what are your thoughts on that?
I think this stems back to corporations and the money and how they manage our lives and have taken over our lives, because the assumption now is for many employers that they have 24/7 access to you through either texting or email, and you have to respond immediately to your employer. Clearly this technology is serving the corporate interests much more, I think, than the human interests in many, many, many ways. Clearly, there's a lot of value in having access to the Internet instantaneously everywhere, but we need to seriously consider what the costs are in terms of our psychology, in terms of our social health, in terms of our physical health, the long-term costs. Particularly, I'm concerned about the effects on children, because mm-hmm. these studies I cited earlier, looking at long-term risk for cancer, basically were taking people who started using this technology as adults. And the little evidence we have, long-term effects on children, indicates the risks are far greater in terms of brain tumor risk when people start using cell phones as children. So children's exposure is going to have a multitude of effects, some playing out in terms of cancer and other tumors, some in terms of other kinds of neurologic problems. And I think increasingly we're going to see evidence of reproductive health effects. And the manufacturers are totally disingenuous. They provide the warnings. In fact, several models of the BlackBerry have a specific warning that tells children and young adults to keep the phone away from their lower abdomen, and for pregnant women to keep the phone away from their abdomen. We also have evidence, four case studies that have been published in the peer-reviewed literature by oncologists, of breast tumors from women who carried the cell phone in their bras for several years. These were young women, and the tumors were right over where the cell phone antenna was kept. These are multifocal tumors, and the oncologists report they've never seen this kind of pattern of tumors from any other cause.
And Joel, is all of this information on your website, Electro, or the electromagnetic radiation?
EMR.com. SAFEREMR.com. Yes, it is on my website. And the name of the center is the Center for Family and Community Health in the School of Public Health at Cal.
Okay, great, because I just wanted to have that resource available for listeners, because this week, you know, a lot of people have called in saying, well, I don't think the evidence is conclusive. A lot of people say this is junk science. There's no way of really knowing, so how can you be sure? But all of the data and all of the research you cited is on your website. It's safer-emr.com.
Safer-emr.com.
It's also at yourcallradio.org. I just wanted to read a couple emails. Carla says, this is a much overdue discussion. I have a cell phone that I do not depend on. It's for emergency or urgency use only, sometimes once in a week. I've never liked having that tiny thing next to my head. She says that she still has a landline and her friends and family have to deal with it, slow down, and think when they want to connect with me. Thank you for that, Carla. Zach from Stillwater says, I've been listening to this series. I find it fascinating. For myself, I have a prepaid flip phone and basically no cell service in my home. My girlfriend has the iPhone 5 and likes the program Sketchbook, where you use a finger to draw on the screen. I can only imagine how much greater the risk in this case is in this case, and would like your guest to expand on that if possible. Thank you. Thanks, Zach. I'll get to that in a minute. Rob says, people must remember who the machine is and who is the master. Don't be afraid to turn off your device. If it rings, you don't have to answer it. That's what voicemail is for. Many people seem to have no concept of this. This also records location data about you only when your phone is on. So thank you for that. Let's take a few calls and then we'll get responses. Let's hear from Adam in Hollister. Hi, Adam. Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you so much. My comment was that when I was raised up in Siskiyou County, there by Mount Shasta, and my dad, we didn't have any type of electronic. We had like a TV that we used videos for, and that was it. No computers or anything until I was like 20. And I feel like I actually benefited from that type of lifestyle. I spent most of my time training wild horses and splitting firewood and spending time in the woods and time with family and friends, multi-generation. And when I came down here, down south, into the quote-unquote real world, I felt like I was plenty prepared for, you know, the city life, and because I work up in the Bay. And I felt like I wasn't missing anything for not having used all these technologies. I also worked with youth for a long time, and I noticed that a lot of the kids at risk, they couldn't read, but they were way more adept than I was with the electronics, which I thought was kind of funny.
Hmm.
And then on a health note, I've had two transplants, a liver and a kidney. And my question was the amount of risk to, because I'm immunocompromised, I only use a flip phone, but I have to use it a lot because I now I have a farm business. And it's funny because even though I'm doing organic farming, I have to be in constant contact with the chefs and the buyers. So I'm always got to have my phone. But I do just have a flip phone. But, I mean, I'm on it all the time. And so wanted to ask the expert there what, if there's less exposure with a flip phone than there is with a smartphone. And
thank you. Yeah, you know, the Environmental Working Group actually focuses on that. It's the EWG's Guide to Safer Cell Phone Use, and they actually have a list of all the cell phones, and they talk about potential exposure and potential to harm. So check that out at EWG.org, and we will also put that on our website. They also say it varies by wireless carrier, so that's also important to note. So thank you for that, Adam. Let's go next to Pat in San Francisco. Hi, Pat.
Hi. One thing I notice when I'm walking around the mission, these idiots who are totally oblivious to the world around them, they walk across streets without looking. I literally had to curse at a guy to get his attention to keep him from walking into a construction pit. And, you know, they don't realize, you know, the potential harm that they cause themselves or anybody else because they're not aware of the world around them. And almost every time I hear somebody's been robbed of their cell phone, 9 out of 10 times, it's because they're on the phone and they're not aware of their surroundings.
Hmm.
Yeah, and they get themselves hurt.
Yeah, I see that all the time in San Francisco. Well, thank you for calling. We've got time for one more caller, Mike in San Francisco. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I do have a question. For the last few days, I've been hearing you guys talk about cell phone microwaves and whatnot. My question is, what is the difference between the cell phone microwave and obviously your radio transmission microwave?
Okay, thank you. Joel, do you want to take that one?
Sure. Your radio is just a receiver, so it only receives the radio waves, and they're typically not, well, it depends if it's AM or FM, but the cell phone is a two-way, it's a transceiver, it's a transmitter, and it's a receiver. When it's receiving, it's not generating much electromagnetic radiation just from the battery. a magnetic field. But when it's transmitting, it's putting out microwave energy, which is why, in response to Adam's call, you need to keep the cell phone away from your body at all times whenever it's turned on. Better, or put it in airplane mode and just turn it on occasionally, and the Wi-Fi or the cell phone capability.
And just quickly,
you should,
Joel,
not keep the phone on your body. They're not designed by the manufacturer to be kept directly on your body.
So what would you say?
Manufacturers won't tell you that.
We don't have much time, but briefly, to people who play games, like Zach called about his girlfriend sketching. I mean, I see little kids playing games on devices all the time, and they have the device right in their lap.
Yeah, that's not a good idea. As I said earlier, the reproductive organs are particularly sensitive to this form of radiation. I see pregnant women on BART keeping it on their abdomen.
Right.
This is not good. I've seen, kids on bicycles using their cell phone. Obviously, that's putting them at risk of an accident.
And 30 seconds, Joel, what would you like to see the government do? Because you believe that while personal changes are great, at the end of the day, we need government intervention here.
Well, we need the government to seriously fund a research and education initiative so we can reduce the harms created by these technologies, rein them in, so we can teach people how to use these technologies safely, because people are not going to give up their cell phone or their laptop.
Right.
We need to wire our schools for internet, not provide every kid with a wireless laptop or iPad. This is $1 billion boondoggle. In L.A. alone, their estimates are up to $1 billion for giving every kid a laptop, wireless laptop, and Wi-Fi in every school, unnecessarily exposing these kids to 6 or more hours a day, and the staff and the pregnant teachers to this form of radiation. It's unnecessary.
And
you
Levi,
get internet access through connectivity.
Levi, final thoughts, 30 seconds.
I want to give us a chance to take a deep breath in, because we move so quickly that we often don't take time to remember that our body is the best form of technology and our mind is the highest form of tech. So today when you're out there, put down the phone for a minute and get in touch with the highest form of technology, which is yourself and the people around you. Thank you.
Levi Felix is founder and CEO of Digital Detox and director of Camp Grounded Summer Camp for Adults. You can find more information about the camps at yourcallradio.org. Dr. Joel Moskowitz directs the Center for Family and Community Health in the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley, and he runs the Electromagnetic Radiation Safety webpage and Facebook page. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of Senator Dianne Feinstein accusing the CIA of spying on a Senate panel. How are the media linking the latest revelations to the NSA's mass surveillance program? We'll also discuss the renewed protests in Turkey. We'll be joined by McClatchy's Mark Seibel, The New Yorker's Mark Danner, and the Times of London's Turkey correspondent, Alex Christie Miller. Where did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on, and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.